Seconds. Anyways, I've got Jerome Kersey and John Eric Phelps for a very complicated second hour, but let's start with first. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, doing well, Barry. Good to be back with you.
Well, I read your stuff, and by the way, I've got the same suspicions. I'm not sure about the same conclusions, but I certainly share the suspicions. All right, let's start with... Well, Joel Skousen was our guest a couple of weeks ago. He said the same thing. The fact that we're talking Charlie Hebdo right now. You're talking, well, the perpetrator, Saeed Kouachi, left his wallet in the getaway car. What does that say to you?
Well, that says to me that, you know, either it was a heck of a coincidence because, you know, Barry, I've driven all over the place for, you know, what, 40, 50 years, I'm 56 years old now, and I think once my wallet might have slipped out of my pocket while I was in the car and fallen down into the crack between the driver's seat and the door. So that was one in maybe, you know, 10,000, 50,000, I don't know, a whole lot of times I've been in cars that didn't happen. And so these so-called terrorists who are so professional and they've gone to such lengths to cover their faces so nobody knows who they are, and then they just abandon this car and throw down their wallet. It really looks pretty fishy to me.
Oh, there's plenty of fishy about this, and Joel is really talking from the right, and he reached the same conclusion as you. Now, your conclusion, I want to hear the answer to this. The fact that wallet was in the stolen getaway car, no less, all right? It shows that he was, quote, innocent patsy framed by the real perpetrators of the attack. All right, just dive into it. Who were the real perpetrators?
Well, Barry, you know, I'm editing a book right now. It's called We Are Not Charlie Hebdo. And it's got all kinds of different contributors, you know, Jewish, Christian, Muslim. We got people from all over the world.
You invited me, and I'm going to accept the invitation, by the way. Later on, tell me how long I've got. I've got also things that bother me deeply that are a little different than yours. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, I want to get your perspective on this because you're really good on these things. So we got a really broad spectrum of people. We got a token atheist. We got people from the political right, the political left, all over the world, all the religions, all saying we are not Charlie Hebdo. And I'd say about, you know, at least 80, 90.
What does that mean?
Well, 80, 90% of them think it was probably a false flag or at least suspect it was. And even the ones that aren't coming out and saying that are saying this is Orwellian media orchestration. There's something really wrong about the way the media picked this up. Now, some people are not Charlie Hebdo because they don't want to be a blasphemer. They don't want to be a cartoonist who is making fun of the powerless but not touching the powerful. You know, they don't want to be a secular martyr for this kind of fundamentalist secularism that they're trying to promote in France. They don't want to be a pawn or slave or mind control victim of the New World Order. There's a whole lot of reasons not to identify with this March of the Lemmings to, you know, go over the cliff with signs saying we are Charlie Hebdo, because most of us are not Charlie Hebdo.
I want to make one point. Again, I have to work out how to write this. I've got a background where the real victims, the real Charlie Hebdos, were the Jews. And without diving into it, because you don't know, Zionism is very divided, and there's good guys and bad guys, and labor Zionism is the bad guy. And for me to write this won't be simple. But one thing is, the day after the attack, they interviewed an editoress who survived. And what did she say? They can't wipe out free speech. What is she, nuts? It's been done thousands of times. What you've got about the Nazis wasn't that long ago. If you want to wipe out free speech, you do it.
It's usually the governments that do it. And here, the French government tells us that they're supporting free speech. And then, of course, right after Charlie Hebdo, they run around arresting people for free speech.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well,
I mean, they arrested people, but not people.
Well, they arrested Dieudonné for making a kind of a tasteless joke. You know, Dieudonné is this guy who's been hounded all over France for being politically incorrect. He says, you know, he feels like a terrorist because he's been repeatedly dragged into court, and they canceled his comedy show. He had, 100,000 people or so signed up for tickets to his comedy tour, and the government shut that down and arrested him for making a joke in which he said something like, je suis Charlie Coulibaly, or whatever, the name of the guy who was one of the terrorists. So Dieudonné is making, basically, you know, doing an ironic joke saying that he feels like a terrorist more than he feels like he's supposed to feel, you know, like the government wants him to feel. And so the government comes and arrests him. You know, this is the most the guy who draws the biggest audiences of any comedian in France, and he's been completely shut down and arrested and bankrupted. And that's just one example. There were dozens and dozens of other people arrested for, like, some of them, I think, said things that were, you know, considered to be sympathizing with the terrorists and things like that.
Well, I want you to know, like, he isn't busy enough. The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, was in France the next day after a synagogue was hit and four Jews killed. Now, same thing with Denmark. You shoot up Danes, but then you go, no, in France it was a Jewish grocery store, in Denmark it was a synagogue. It doesn't matter. There's always a Jewish tie. And it's a lot of effort to go to a Jewish tie to prepare it. But every time, it's two in a row. Anyways, just those two, it goes back further. And it bothers me a whole heck.
Well, speaking of the Jewish tie, you know, it's what's really kind of interesting here is that this pattern in which there's first a shooting against some kind of non-Jewish target or a national target, Charlie Hebdo or whatever, and then a Jewish target. This has now happened three times. The first time was that shooting in France 2 years ago, where a couple of soldiers were shot down, and then, you know, like the next day or a couple of days later, there was an attack on a Jewish school. And then they blamed the same guy for both attacks, but it almost obviously was not the same guy.
Well, in this case, it was the same day. In Denmark, it was the same day.
Denmark was the same day.
Coordinated.
Yeah. So we have three cases now where we had an attack on a sort of a free speech target or a national target, and then an attack on a Jewish target afterwards. And in all three cases, the two attacks were not obviously connected. It wasn't that obvious.
Can you imagine Copenhagen shooting up a little gathering of very minor writers? It wasn't, you know, wasn't anything serious. A Swedish filmmaker was explaining why he did what he did. They shot him up, but that's not the part that bothers me. After shooting them up, why take the trouble to go to a synagogue and shoot the bodyguard? Mm-hmm. And the Jews are getting really victimized.
Well, Barry, do you think this could be like when they is this like when they terrorized the Iraqi Jews into leaving? Is it part of a strategy of tension in which the globalist NATO New World Order powers are trying to, you know, keep the pot boiling of their little religious war?
No, it's not that.
So what is it?
Well, Netanyahu showed up with a magic message. He was at the funeral. They were actually buried in Israel, but he was at the synagogue where he invited all French Jews to move to Israel. Now, first of all, most don't want to leave. They'll wait it out if they can. Well, he considers them stupid, but most potential migrants are going to the United States. They're not going to Israel. But he was there giving that message. It bothered me a whole lot.
Well, it looked really bad. It was bad form. I mean, they disinvited him, and he barged in and showed up anyway. And he's really making Israel look bad when he does this. It's almost like he's trying to, you know, make a lot of people think it looks suspicious, like maybe he was part of the group that pulled it off.
It didn't look good either. It really didn't. And again, you're asking me to write something, but you have to understand Israel's losing population awful lot to the States. You have a few attacks. France, Denmark's minors, 12,000 Jews. France has got 450,000. You can repopulate your country if it works. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's looking like it's not going to work terribly well. But if that's the idea, there's a background to this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have one of the contributors to the book who does think that that's one of the angles, that it's a kind of a reprise of how certain, you know, elements of the Zionist Project have terrorized Jews into going to Israel. As you know, that
again,
you know,
you're saying the Zionist, again, that's ignorant.
Well, no, I'm not saying all Zionists are the same.
Zionist Project. You might be understanding what a complicated movement this is. Mm-hmm. You say Zionist, you're getting everybody involved, and that's wrong.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. It's like blaming every American nationalist for every bad thing the U.S. Empire does. But at the same time, I've come to agree with you over the years. You know, I used to be a kind of typical brainwashed left-leaning academic, and I figured that the right-wing Israelis were really always the bad guys.
Oh, they're the good guys.
Well, I don't know if I've come that far, but I've come to realize that the labor Zionists that you harp on are definitely not the good guys for the most part. Not, at least some of them are connected to the
Germany.
New World Order.
They were wiped out in Poland. They were wiped out in Palestine. They were, oh gosh, I'm not going to do this, but unless you understand that they had no part of Zionism during the 40s, you don't know what's going on. They were wiped out.
Yeah, well, I'm still a fan of Naturae Carta. I figure that
Naturae Carta doesn't exist. It's so minor. Look, you've got to understand, taking a minor league Haredi cult, that doesn't help either.
But they're the ones, to my mind, that are, you know, speaking the truth and holding on
no,
to
they're
ethics.
No, not. And I know them. I know them well. Don't fall for this. What you've got is a reality. The reality is in Israel, maybe fewer than 1% are really running the show. And the Israeli people, well, they're worried about security and crap like that, but they're missing the point. They don't vote for anything being done. Nothing is being done with their consent. If you don't get that, you don't get the big picture.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that for sure. I think that the oligarchies these days are, you know, putting an end to what little democracy remained in the democratic Western countries, and Israel's one of them.
These days?
Well, right. Maybe it's always... I think it's gotten worse, though, Barry. I mean, I think there was a lot more... Like, when they were selling...
In the 40s,
they were selling themselves
giving
us progress, then they had to get our consent. Now they're just fear-mongering, and they don't need our consent anymore.
If I sit down and write, I'll have to lay back and figure out how to do this so you understand. We're being set up. All right. That's it. That's the basic theme. The fact of the matter is what was done in France. And by the way, Joel had more than just the wallet in the car. He did a pretty good job. The right, the left, anyone who is somewhat discriminating knows it stinks. The operation stinks.
Mm. Did you see the fake execution of the police officer? The AK-47 round straight to the head from point-blank range that doesn't have any effect on the guy? A little blank round kicks up some dust a couple of feet away from his head?
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried that the next day a million people were out in the streets and Netanyahu and Abbas were, you know, three people away from each other marching for freedom of speech.
Did you know they photoshopped that, Barry? That was fake. They never marched in front of the crowd. They took them over to a secured off side street where nobody was, and they filmed them marching, and then they used Hollywood techniques to make it look like they were marching in front of the crowd.
Well, they were really good techniques. Looked to me like there was a big crowd and a lot of security around them. But neither here nor there, that's how it was looked at worldwide. We're all here to tell the French that they, meaning whoever wiped out Charlie Hebdo, can't wipe out free speech. That's a joke. Free speech is a snap. You just get a fascist government like the Nazis. The French should remember that. And they're wiping out. That's it. There's no more free speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think the West was ever really the bastion of free speech that it likes to imagine itself?
I can say what I'm doing. By the way, I say that reluctantly, and I'm plenty scared. I didn't leave Israel because I wanted to. Look, the fact of the matter is there's a side of Israel Jews won't accept easily because it endangers them. They're in a trap. They know everything I write, including the Yemenite children, which I sent 3 days ago. They know that happened. They know it's the truth. But they don't want to say so because there's security concerns. That's the trap.
Mm-hmm. They remind me which children?
President because of security concerns. They can't get out of the trap.
Now, which children?
Oh, you didn't read my article. All right. It was sent to you. Go look at it again.
Okay. I'll bring it back up during the break.
I won't go into this.
Okay. I didn't hear the word you said with the children. You're talking
Yemenite.
Yemen. Okay. Yeah.
They were kidnapped from their parents, 4,500. They were involved in horrible atomic exercises.
Yes. Okay.
Experiments.
I do know about that.
Well, Peres was the head of the Israeli Atomic Energy Commission, and he was the one who guided these experiments. Oh, I'm doing all the talking. I'm sorry. Let's go back to you.
Okay.
You're getting me thinking, look, you're right. There is a real problem that France may be Jewless. Israel may get 50,000 if there's massive migration. Most are going to America. It will backfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And the French are not at all happy about this, nor are the Danes. The Europeans don't like hearing from Netanyahu that the Jews have to leave
Europe.
Oh,
that's not what they're fearing from. They're fearing from Arabs. I think you got that one wrong, too. Mm-hmm. Look, you got to figure, no matter what you think about Netanyahu, that's not the number one fear in Denmark or France. It's Arabs.
That's true. But they've kind of mixed the two problems together. They're saying, oh, yet another problem with all of these Arabs is that it's endangering our Jewish communities. That's the standard discourse.
That's for darn sure. But again, the Jews don't understand. Look, I'm saying victims, and I'm not saying it lightly. They don't understand anything being done to them. They feel insecure, but they don't realize where that insecurity is coming from, and a chunk of it is coming from their, let's call them, hidden leaders.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the Arabs in France being such a threat to Jews, I know there was that Russia Today published that thing where the Jewish guy was walking through Paris and getting insulted and spat upon. But my reaction to that, Barry, and I'm sure it's different from yours, was that the reason that dressing in Jewish garb and walking through an Arab ghetto in Paris is going to get you bad results is because that from the viewpoint of the Arabs in the ghettos of Paris, Jews are the powerful oppressor primarily because of what's been done in occupied Palestine. So dressing up in Jewish garb and walking through Arab ghettos in Paris, just like dressing up in a KKK robe and walking through an American black ghetto,
I'm not going to go through occupied Palestine. I've written about that. There have been enough polls done by the Ottomans, by the British. The Jews were the majority in all the major cities of Palestine. It's occupied by Arabs. But if we get into that, we're off on a different tangent. I don't want to go there. 9/11, that's where we're going next. Again, I have information that backs you. All right, without talking about occupied, my country of Israel is not the country I moved to. I'm not going to go into
it. Yeah, we don't have to rehash those old arguments. I know we have kind of polar opposite positions.
Well, it's an old argument. These are polls that were done. I'm not going into it. Let us go into 9/11, which was an inside job. I know it. And Israel was involved. I know it. Let's start with yours. Now, I'm not saying Israel directed it, but Israel was involved in it. Let's go to 9/11 for the next half hour where we're going to agree because, in fact, all right, let's just go through your points. I'm talking too much. Let's talk about the false flag operation of September 11, 2001. Let's start with the magic suitcases. All right. Now, you have to sort out Mohammed Atta and what he was doing in Germany before he arrived in the United States, leaving two suitcases in both places. Go to it.
Indeed. Well, the first magic suitcase that allowed the authorities to pin 9/11 on Mohammed Atta was the one that was delivered to the German police by a Good Samaritan burglar who had been burgling an apartment. He found a suspicious suitcase full of stuff, you know, in Arabic, and he felt compelled to deliver it to the police, being such a Good Samaritan. And this was reported. This is not conspiracy theory. This is not coming from David Ray Griffin or anybody like that. This is coming from the Der Spiegel book on 9/11.
What was Atta doing in Germany?
Well, he was over there from Egypt. He was allegedly as an architecture student, but he apparently the foundation that paid for him to go to Germany is one of those kind of dubious foundations linked to the very wealthy families that dominate the West. And there's a lot of suspicion about that. There's also suspicion about whether he may have been impersonated by one or more intelligence agents.
He was in Germany, right? He was an architecture student.
Yeah, he's an architecture student in Germany.
Good.
Yeah. And so anyway, this one's he's tied into this Hamburg side of the plot by this magic suitcase. Now, even the German police said they knew that this suitcase was given to them not by a burglar, but by an intelligence agent posing as a burglar. And the only question was, which intelligence agency was he working for? So that was the first suitcase. The second suitcase...
Wait, don't rush off so quick.
Okay, you want to stick with the first suitcase.
It goes deeper than... We're not going to leave it dangling like this.
Okay.
And first of all, the poor burglar was sentenced to 8 years for burglary, so it wasn't a good idea to hand in the suitcase.
Now, the Der Spiegel book does not mention that. What's your source for that?
I'm joking.
Okay.
All
good.
Right. Now, let's go back to the burglar.
You had me going there.
And let's go and let's reach the conclusions. From your article, again, you sent me all kinds of stuff. This was the most relevant to me. One was long and irrelevant, but this was real relevant. Now, these quotes, well, forget von Bulow and all this. Let's go to Francesco Cossiga. He's the Italian prime minister. Mm-hmm. Do you want to quote you?
Well, yeah.
Should I quote you?
Sure. I mean, you probably have it in front of you, but what I recall Cossiga said was everybody in the progressive circles in Europe, those parties, they all know that the 9/11 was pulled off by the CIA and Mossad.
All right. Again, there are proofs that you are way more persuasive than what you've got, and I collected other proofs, but... Oh, gosh.
But the thing about Cossiga, Barry, let's hang on to Cossiga for a second, because he should know from false flag terrorism. Cossiga was
I hate to do this to you, but we have to take... We're actually having a useful conversation, but we have to take 3 minutes off for commercials. Get ready. We're going to do 9/11 for the rest of the show. All right?
9/11 coming at you.
All right. And the first thing is when we get back, we'll plug each other, and then we'll, oh gosh, do I agree with you and I shouldn't? But we'll see you in 3 minutes.
I will not fall asleep, and I'm from overseas, yes, they're trying to be free. Erase the demons out of our memory, change your name and your identity. Our freedom's our truth and our dark history. Why is everybody always chasing me? Cut off. Jerusalem, if I forget you, let my right hand forget what it's supposed to do. Caught up in these ways and the world's gone crazy. I don't know which was the face, case of the Simon says. If I forget the truth, then my words won't penetrate. Babylon burning in the place, can't see through the case. Chuck down all of them dirty ways. That's the price that you pay for selling lies to the youth. No way, not okay. Oh, no way, not okay.
The Jewish people and the stinger are people we don't want to believe are doing the stinging, all right? It's called The Stinger, Not the Stung. It's at lulu.com, www.lulu.com. Write in my last name in the search box, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. And my website, David Samarin, is still keeping it up, so it's at www.barrychamish.com. And we're going to talk about a few things in the Stinger, Not the Stung, coming up. Kevin, plug yourself.
Yeah, I'm with truthjihad.com. That's my personal website. I have a radio show, and I write a lot for Veterans Today, Press TV, and other outlets.
Wait, Veterans Today, that isn't that guy. What's his name? Donald something?
No, the main guy there who started is Gordon Duff.
Gordon Duff, believe me, your credibility is not good on that one. I wouldn't push that one. I think
people either love him or hate him.
Phony. Misinformation. People have been stung by him every which way. He writes whatever he feels like. Look, go and do your first website. That's the one people want to read. Say it again.
Okay, truthjihad.com will take you to all my writing. And I also have the Muslim-Jewish-Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. There have been different coordinators over there, but now it's pretty much back in my hands. And Payman Mutahada, the Jewish guy, was handling it for the last few years, but didn't have a whole lot of time. He's very, very busy with his business. But anyway, the Muslim-Jewish-Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth is an attempt to put an end to this religious war, which is what 9/11 was designed to create. It's more strategy of tension, you know, just like they had the Cold War strategy of tension against the left, allowing them to steal our money and run around the world basically scamming and raping, looting, and pillaging. They're doing the same thing today under cover of a religious war, which is what I think all this false flag terrorism is really about.
I will write something, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. I have something to contribute. But let's go back to Atta. All right. The Italian prime minister says it was an intelligence operation. Let's go to the – now, he left Germany, okay? Remember, somehow Atta, after leaving this really incriminating suitcase in Germany – makes it to the States.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, there's no security, obviously, between Germany and the States, where he loses another suitcase. First of all, explain this.
Okay, well, first I should say that the otter running around Florida behaved very differently from how otter had behaved in Germany. In Germany, he was known as a very, very shy, sensitive, quiet guy. And in Florida, he was a loudmouthed braggart who snorted a lot of cocaine, drank like a fish, went on gambling junkets constantly, had $100 wads of $100 bills everywhere he went, dated a pink-haired stripper. He went to a lot of strip clubs and houses of ill repute. His pink-haired stripper girlfriend was Amanda Keller. She said his favorite food was pork chops, which is rather unusual for radical Muslims. And she also said he spoke something like 5, 6, 7 languages, and one of them he spoke fluently was Hebrew, which the original Otta never spoke. So anyway, there may have been an impersonator or something, or maybe they just brainwashed him. He was also
Keller is her name.
Yeah,
she Amanda exists. Keller. She could be found.
Yeah, she was finally tracked down. Dan Hopsiger wrote the book on the so-called hijackers, these guys who were being set up to take the blame for 9/11, being told to take flying lessons while they were helping CIA drug smugglers in Florida.
I will shortly add something, but Atta took... Well, he was supposed to take a plane to Boston from Portland, Maine.
Mm-hmm. On 9/11.
Yep. But the plane, of course, flew into one of the towers of the World Trade Center and knocked it down, supposedly. But more to the point, another suitcase didn't make it onto the flight. And, well, it helped track down the fact that Atta was head of the gang. You go and do the second suitcase.
Yeah, this is Magic Suitcase number 2, and it's much better known than the first one. This was the one that Atta supposedly loaded up with all of this evidence, the name of the 19 hijackers. Of course, they screwed that up a little bit. He had a document, like a hijacker's manual or something, as well as flight pilot's manuals. And he had his last will and testament in this suitcase. Now, he allegedly checked this onto a flight in Portland, Maine, that was going to Boston, a commuter flight. And then he was going to transfer to Flight 11 in Boston and fly it into the World Trade Center. Now, this raises some questions such as, number one, why would he go to Portland, Maine in the first place? He was in Boston the night before 9/11. Instead of just catching his flight in Boston and not taking a chance on missing it, this was a pretty important flight after all, he drove up to Portland, Maine and took a commuter flight on the morning of 9/11, and he checked his suitcase in on that commuter flight. Now, normally that suitcase would have made the transfer in Boston, and it would have been on the suicide plane. It would have gone up in flames, and why did he put his will in there? It doesn't make any sense. But then, guess what? That suitcase magically failed to be transferred from one plane to the other in
Boston.
Maybe
the burglar from Germany showed up again.
It must have been that German burglar. But for whatever reason, the suitcase didn't get transferred. It was discovered as evidence, and that was how, the day after 9/11, they knew exactly who did it. Well, of course, on 9/11 itself, they were all chanting, Bin Laden, Bin Laden, Bin Laden. So they already knew then. But then the next day, they had the names of the 19 hijackers, thanks to that magic suitcase.
And I'm going to ask you, there's a point I've been stressing, and it's in my book, The Stinger, Not the Stung. Go get it. It's at lulu.com. You want to know about stinging. I'm an expert at stinging. Where were the planes that flew? Where did both, 4 of the planes take off from?
Okay, let's see if I can get this right. There was Flight 77, which allegedly hit the Pentagon, but let's face it, it didn't. That took off from Washington Dulles Airport.
No, and it didn't. It took off from Newark.
77? No, I thought that was 93.
There were 4 planes, Boston, 1 from Newark.
Yeah, 2 from Boston, 1 from Newark, and 1 from D.C. And as I recall, the D.C. one was 77, the Newark one, I thought, was 93, and the 2 Boston ones were the 2 trade center
planes. You know what? We'll look this up, but more to the point, I'm going to interrupt big time. Now, I don't – just live with this. Go look me up on the internet afterwards. An Israeli security firm took over security for Boston and Newark 2 years before. And
yep.
I found that their failure was – more than suspicious. To me, it it's enough to get a police investigation going real quick.
Absolutely.
The two security at Boston and Newark, it was an Israeli firm. I don't have it in front of me. Big deal. I'll find it. And that's fact number one for whatever I write to you.
And guess what? We have no video, no security video of any of these guys getting on the alleged attack planes. Now, to camouflage that, they produced a fake, supposed security video of the guys in D.C. at Dulles. But it's totally fake. It has no time and date stamp. The shadows are wrong for the time of day. It was not taken at 9/11. It's not a real security video at all. It has cuts. So there's not a single security video showing any of these guys getting on any of these planes. There is not a shred of evidence that any of the 19 Arabs were even on any of these planes. The passenger lists don't have any Arab names on them, although they're not official because guess what? There are no official passenger lists. There are no ticket stubs, and there's no testimony from any of the airline employees who would have ticketed and boarded these guys. Not one shred of the evidence that there should have been had any of these 19 guys been on the planes. Therefore, ergo, we know that they weren't.
Well, possibly because Logan Airport in Boston and Newark Airport, the security was in the hands. I'm not going to say this. I have heavy suspicions.
Well, the way it was probably done, Barry, and you know we don't know for sure, but it looks like rather than doing it the obvious way, which would be to seize these planes with remote control and fly them into their targets, instead it looks like what happened was that the planes were seized by remote control and then presumably landed, and military drones went in to three of the targets. As far as what happened in Pennsylvania, who knows? But it certainly was not. It was not commercial planes that hit the Trade Center, and it was not a commercial plane that hit the Pentagon.
I can go a little into that as well. And by the way, I don't think drones or planes could have knocked down those buildings. Neither here nor there.
That's right. No, they were controlled demolitions.
No doubt about it. And we'll get to Pennsylvania in a second. I hope, by the way, the plane 4 that hit the Pentagon didn't take off from Washington. They were not controlled by Israeli intelligence, neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, there's one scenario for this thing, Barry, which is that there was a kind of a plot that was hijacked. That is, on the American side, there was a plan for a false flag. And it kind of got hijacked by the Israeli side. Now, I'm not saying the Israeli side, of course.
I would say that's my scenario.
Really?
But neither here nor there. I have to do, as I said, I have information, and I'm going to say it again. The Israeli democracy didn't take a vote and said, should we take down buildings? Well, 1 and 2, and as well as, now what I'm going to say, Building 7 was supposed to be brought down by a plane that took off from Newark, I believe.
That's one of the theories.
I'll go into that shortly.
Yep.
Let's go into the magic passport. We got lots of magic passports. Satam el-Sukami. What do you know about
that? Yeah, that was the one that was found by the Trade Center. You know, everything else in the Trade Center was obliterated into very fine dust, but this magic passport of Satam el-Sukami floated down, and it was handed in by another of these apparent Good Samaritans, and we don't know who it was. There's no chain of custody.
It was a burglar from Germany.
That same burglar from Germany. He's a busy guy.
I'll betcha.
Yeah, he probably dropped the passports in Pennsylvania, too. I think there were two so-called hijackers' passports in Pennsylvania. Which is the only evidence that there had ever been any plane there. There was nothing else there. There's just a hole in the ground.
No, I disagree a bit. I saw the flight. There is, well, maybe I saw a different photo than you, but it looks like the plane crashed and bounced once. A big jump, maybe 100 yards forward from the back is the front. But neither here nor there. Talk about the next two magic passports, and then I'll butt in.
Okay, well, the two magic passports I'm aware of were Satam el-Sukami's in New York, and then these two found in Pennsylvania. But Barry, if that plane bounced, where did it land? Because nobody has ever shown any evidence, pictures, wreckage, nothing like that. Nothing, no pictures, no wreckage has ever been documented from that plane.
When we get off, we'll both go looking, okay?
Okay.
We'll sort it out.
I'll meet you in Shanksburg.
It certainly didn't land anywhere where it was supposed to. First of all, who were the passports of?
You know, I don't remember the two names in Pennsylvania.
I do. Zia Jara and Saeed El Ghamdi.
Oh, now Zia Jara is an interesting guy. He's Lebanese, and isn't his family kind of, like, tight with Mossad?
Let's say the rumors.
Yep. Yeah, it's there were three of them. There was not just one Zia Jara, but during the couple of years before 9/11, there were three separate individuals with blatantly different facial features running around with ID, claiming it to be the same Zia Jara.
All right, let me now do Pennsylvania briefly. At 5:20 in the afternoon, Building 7 came down. Beautiful, beautiful explosion. Went straight down, and they have explained this every which way. I've read the explanations. They're all absurd. But it was ordered, supposedly, in coordination with the fire department. Larry Silverstein ordered that building to come down. The reason was the flight 93 didn't arrive. It went down. Something went wrong. It was supposed to hit the building. They had a building full of explosives and no plane hitting it.
Well, Flight 93 was late taking off, and that might have been part of the problem.
Well, you're supposedly from 37,000 feet getting cell phones to the ground. Look, there's a lot of things that I'm not aware could have been done that happened on that flight. But one thing's for sure, it didn't hit Building 7. And they were stuck with a building full of explosives and no excuse why the building should come down. So they just brought it down.
Yeah, we don't need no stinking reason. Just let the building just implode. Why not?
Well, the reason was there was smoke coming out of it, and they were really stuck.
A couple of wastebasket fires made it do that.
The fact is, where could you plant all those explosives? What do you mean bring it down? In the middle of 9/11 and that day, you could plant explosives to bring down a 47-story building? You just go in there with your explosive? Look, I don't want to go into it, but that's absurd. But the building was filled with explosives, and they brought it down.
Yep, meaning it was pre-wired long before that day, meaning the towers were too, meaning the whole thing is a big psyop.
Yep. There, you got my worst fears. You did it.
Yep. Now, Barry, I think that there were, it was, Israelis were involved in this, certainly not just Israelis. And, you know, we have to face the fact that Western governments, which pretend to be so open and free and democratic, have been terrorizing people with these false flag attacks forever. The Israelis may be the leaders per capita, but NATO, you know, ran Operation Gladio, blowing up Europeans, murdering their own people, blaming leftists so they would get their authoritarian governments in power. That was going on throughout the Cold War.
Well, you got me. I never pushed this too hard. For one thing, you say 9/11 Israel. I don't get a lot of support, but it's been bugging me for the longest time. Silverstein, by the way, if you think that Sharon was a right-wing Jewish leader, he's the one who got the Jews out of Gaza. He was the liberator of Gaza. He met with Silverstein, and you go read it all by yourself afterwards. This has been weighing on me for the longest time, and
I would worry. You know, I think this has got huge blowback potential. You know, some people in the 9/11 Truth Movement, you know, back when I was first bringing up the Israeli angle, and you know, they were all saying, "No, don't go there. That's going to be so unpopular. No, you know, people are going to call you an anti-Semite if you even talk about this." Some of those people said, "Well, you know, maybe you're right. There are these clues leading towards Israel, but this could be some kind of Nazi type plot by people who actually wanted to blow back in Israel's
face." The clues. You heard what I said. Those aren't clues. the owner of Building 7 brought it down. Where did he get the explosives from? Yeah. There's all kinds of things that aren't clues already.
Yeah. No, right? I'm with you.
That have been forgiven somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's going to happen as we come to terms with this? I mean, the media is trying to hush it up, but the people, anybody who's paying attention knows this now. Where's this going to go?
You have to, from your point of view, sort out, number one, I'm not going to go into occupied Israel. It's our country, and there's all kinds of decent reasons to defend it. But the fact remains, under the surface, there is somebody running the place that we don't know about. Maybe I'm not joined by a lot of people. All right. I suspect this labor Zionism. Again, they banned the right wing. They banned the religious. They took over the whole movement during the Holocaust. It's a horrible past. The right were hunted down like rabbits. After the Holocaust in Israel, once you understand that, maybe you'll get some balance here.
Okay. Well, I appreciate a lot of your work on that stuff. I think there's this element in the rich folks that run Israel, the Ashkenazi element. I think the Labor Party probably is very well represented in this.
It's not the Labor Party. It is the secret Labor Party.
Okay, the Central Committee. It's probably the Central Committees that run all these things. The Central Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, you know, there's these big groups, you know, parties, they have their Central Committees, and, you know, that's probably where the decisions are taken.
Well, before we dive, I'm going to take in your last point. This depresses me tremendously, by the way. All right. But,
Well, it annoys me, too.
Well, the fact is, I'm a very proud Jew, and I'm going to write your article as a proud Jew, but I got to figure out a way. Look, you got to blame America, then go blame yourself, then you can blame Israel. Or blame us together, all right? Whatever it takes, somehow we have to find a manifesto where we can keep on living. Mm-hmm. All right. That said, let's go to your final point. And one that I noted a long time ago, that's James Earl Ray. He was the shooter of Dr. King.
I know that
because he ended up in Canada and then flew to England with a phony passport and a phony name. He was really, really, really protected. Let's do James Earl Ray, last point.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him. He didn't shoot Dr. King, and he wasn't protected. He was manipulated. You know, he was an ex-con. He was out of prison, and he was being taken care of by what he thought was some kind of arms smuggling organization. Well, that arms smuggling organization was part of the plan to kill Dr. King. People in the United States military actually confessed to William Pepper that they organized this assassination in order to prevent chaos in America. Dr. King was going to take 500,000 people to D.C. and not leave until they got some action on poverty and until they got the war in Vietnam ended. And so King was viewed as an actionable threat to national security. He was taken out in a highly professional military assassination. There were U.S. military snipers stationed on the rooftops in case the actual shooter, who was the best sharpshooter in the Memphis Police Department, missed. But he didn't miss. So it went down with U.S. military, with U.S. government agencies, including CIA and FBI involved. They worked through some of their organized crime proxies to get the death.
As I said, we have a little time, in Paris, the girl shooter, the most dangerous girl in France, somehow got away. She flew to Syria and then straight to
and isn't that a great storyline for the media?
Syria.
Isn't that great?
The same thing with Ray.
Yeah.
Ray had a passport. He was on the next flight to Halifax, Nova Scotia, on to England. That could not have been done by this schnook.
Yeah, well, he knew he was in trouble. And how, you know, the details.
No, he didn't.
Ray? Sure he did.
He knew he had a passport and had orders to get the hell out of there.
Well, yeah, that's
I'm
true.
I'm not sure he knew anything.
But I think, he knew that he was being set up.
Pretty smart Ray, if that's true.
Well, at least now, you know, a lot of times patsies figure it out pretty quickly for obvious reasons. Look at Oswald, who told the police, "I am a patsy." You know, it's this guy in France, I forget his name, the guy who turned himself in, they put out the APB on three guys, those brothers and his third guy. The third guy immediately turned himself into police and says, "I didn't do it. Here I am. Here's my alibi." And you haven't heard much about that, of course.
And yeah, just like after 9/11, I suppose
the hijackers turned themselves in. 10 people were still alive. 10 of the hijackers were still alive, turned themselves in after 9/11.
They did?
Yeah. Yeah, this is in Jay Kolar's article published by Elsevier, the leading
European. You're saying they survived?
Well, yeah, no. None of these guys were on the planes. And, well, you know, 10 of them showed up and were reliably reported to be alive after 9/11.
All right, let's not go there. Reliably, next time I have you on, you'll give me names and dates. Let's not dive into this. I can tell you about Yigal Amir being a great patsy and opening his mouth. And look, I know a little about this too. There is a force at work, and we are actually talking about the same force.
Yep.
The problem, as I see it, is my people don't have a clue. They're like little yo-yos. Up they go and down they go, and up they go and down. They don't know what's going on.
Well, if you could wake them up, that would be great. But they chased you out of Israel, didn't they?
I got real scared. I went to a hospital after a very, very peculiar accident. Yeah, I just ran for the hills. They got to me. They got to my friend Joel. He ran contra Joel Bainerman. He eventually ended up in Cyprus. And yeah. Oh, gosh. Look, thank you, Kevin. I will be in touch with you, and I will write this. And by the way, the next hour, folks, is all winging it. I have no notes. Jerome Corsi first, Eric John Phelps second, without notes. Let's hope it goes well. Thank you, Kevin.
Well, thank you, Barry. It'll go great. You're a talented talker as well as a good investigative reporter. Keep up the good work.
Same here. Same to you. Sorry. See you, folks, in 7.
Baruch atah Adonai. Baruch Abba Yerushalayim. Baruch Ata Adonai. Baruch Abba Yerushalayim. Baruch Abba Yerushalayim.
Yeah, Hakira.